You know, this morning on my way into work, it was drizzling, and I passed two homeless men sleeping on the sidewalk, one on a mattress getting wet, another with his jacket over his head to try and keep dry. Such is the life on the streets. And this morning, HPR's Noe Tanigawa joins us to talk about the plight of the homeless. Good morning, Noe.
Good morning, Catherine. Precisely. An umbrella is a key tool on the street. I know that. You know, this is exactly it. We're heading into rainy season here, and if you're like the 1,000 people who were at the State Homeless Awareness Conference this past week, you are thinking hard about the people who are in that rain. You know, this is Homeless Awareness Month. You may have noticed a lot of towers purple in tribute to that. So let's just jump right in here to the conference. Okay, Gavin. State Homeless Coordinator Scott Moishigate is looking at the 2008-09 recession for indications of how this economic crisis might play out. Okay, what we saw is a gradual increase, a 37% increase in homeless between 2009 and 2016.
We know that we can expect a similar increase on a much larger scale as a result of the current economic challenges that our state is facing due to the pandemic. And similar to the last increase in homelessness that we saw following the 2009 recession, the increase in homelessness is likely to occur over a gradual period of time. I know that this outlook sounds pretty grim, but we also know that homelessness has been decreasing overall by 18% over the past 4 years, between 2016 and January 2020. That downward trend occurred primarily because we had increases in housing-focused programs like Housing First and Rapid Rehousing, as well as really increased coordination among all partners, both in government, the nonprofit sector, as well as community volunteers. So if we can figure out how to maintain and increase coordination, as well as bring some of our housing programs to scale, I think the bright spot is that it really is possible for us to mitigate the rates of increase in homelessness moving forward and to bring those numbers down again.
That's the plan. Increase coordination between partners and, you know, bring housing programs to scale. So let's look at the partners providing services into that first. Last month, a deeper dive into Oahu's point-in-time homeless count numbers was released, and the study's called Unsheltered in Honolulu. The authors were Anna Pruitt and Jack Barley. It's available on the city website, by the way. The study appears to show that service providers are quite effective. I talked to service providers. They found permanent housing for hundreds of people even during the pandemic. Listen to this closely, because Pruitt and Baril are sharing something that's a little hard to believe.
Of the folks who have been connected to services that have been in the system, most of them were not repeaters, meaning they were only counted in one point in time count. Now, that doesn't mean that they didn't cycle in and out of homelessness, but I think it does suggest that people who are connected to services are getting housed and they are getting the help that they need.
So just always more people falling into the system. So until they stop the faucet from leaking, it's just new people that are falling into homelessness at a constant rate.
Interesting.
These researchers document a continual wash of people onto and off the street, Catherine.
You know, why are people becoming homeless?
They asked. The primary reason people became homeless was not like one devastating medical bill. It was they couldn't pay the rent. They just couldn't find a place they could afford. Affordable housing, okay, now we're on to that. They did take this up at the homeless conference. So Sandra Funt, City Director of Land Management here, laid out Honolulu's strategy, our strategy to increase affordable housing inventory and efficiently use city land.
What we did was we focused on acquiring vacant buildings that could be turnkey. We would be able to rent immediately, or they were properties that we could renovate for quick inventory and then rent out. So we were not looking for huge development projects of the city. We felt large developments should be with the private sector partnerships. But we also looked at smaller projects in the community. We wanted to integrate our affordable housing and low-income housing into communities for well-balanced improvements to the community. We had preferences for projects near the rail stations as rail matures, we see that in other cities, land values around the rail stations increase tremendously. And so in order to be sure that we can preserve a well-balanced community, we wanted to acquire key pieces of property that are near the rail stations and preserve them for affordable rentals.
I mean, well, that's what you want to know, right? Has the city been thinking about all the options and how to preserve any gains into the future? Fund gave examples of their efforts, okay, modular housing, kauhale, or separate units with shared facilities like Hale Maliola, all the way to like Verona Village in Evo, where former Oahu sugar mill workers are going to be accommodated. Solutions range from like 10 families in McCully to Westlock Family Housing. It's going to be 123 units on 3.7 acres there, right at Renton and Fort Weaver Roads. I mean, Fund outlined 11 city projects over the last 5 years. We had an existing inventory of 1,180 affordable units. This is how many were added. 1,472 were added in the last 5 years. There are more on the books, but Partners in Care executive director said the latest numbers she's seen show Oahu needs 20,000 units now, and she expects that number to grow as landlords maybe go out of business.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the fear, right? People are wondering if this is going to get worse.
Well, I got to tell you, Morishige admitted this could look grim. So to close the conference, they invited a writer, thinker, homeless services worker from Canada who's apparently really familiar with Hawaii's situation. Ian DeYoung is the president and CEO of Org Code Consulting.
If you could start all over again in the design of the homelessness response system, what would you do differently? I know what I would do differently. I would predominantly do two things differently. And number one, I would reverse engineer it. So the starting point of our workflow was a person who was homeless that achieved housing, then work backwards. Number two, I would design it from the perspective of the end user, not from the perspective of the policymaker or funder or service provider. There are remarkably dedicated nonprofits and public servants and elected officials. What if we leveraged the excellence of everyone in this pursuit? Now is actually a time to be thinking through not just nipping at the margins, but big moves in the space of homeless services, because the future isn't what it used to be. Historically, we think of policy informing procedure, which informs practice, which impacts people. What if we redesign to say people need to impact practice that impacts procedure, that impacts policy? Now's the time to be bold. It's time to vision from a place of strengths rather than deficits. Now is the time to focus on the simple solutions. Simple, not easy.
Yeah, there's not going to be an easy solution there, is there?
Oh, boy. There's nothing. But he says start with the simple things. Get a bandage on that foot. Find a bathroom. Get an ID. Get food stamps and disability. And that's the way relationships build up.
Right. Okay. Hmm. And then got to get those homeless guys some something over their heads. Get them umbrellas. Thanks so much, Noe.
Hey, thank you, Catherine. Happy Aloha Friday.
All right. Aloha Friday. That was HPR's Noe Tanigawa talking about the efforts to help the homeless as we try and ride out this pandemic.